Hello and welcome to Every Woman here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Una Nowling and I am joined in the studio today with two of our hosts, Marvita Oliver. Hello, Marvita.
Hi, Una.
Angela Believes is here as well. Hello, Angela.
What's up, Una?
And we have our other host and co-producer, Fiona, on the phone right now. Fiona, are you there? Fiona? Okay, Fiona is not coming through right now, but we'll try to get her in just a little bit. So, welcome everybody to a very cold and rainy Kansas City today. Hope everyone is having a great day today. And how are you two doing out there?
Fabulous. You know, it's been a pretty eventful for me today, Angela Believes here, world. Thank you for tuning in to Every Woman on KKFI 90.1 FM. It's been a very eventful day, but I'm always happy when I get to come to the studio and be in the company of great people and have our listening audience tune into us. So, you know, everything is everything.
And I'm happy to be here, too. Already looking forward to a good conversation with Angela Believe here on 90.1 KKFI Kansas City Community Radio Station. She says she's shy, but I don't buy it.
Yeah, well, you guys can call in and tell us what your thoughts on if I'm actually appear shy or not. So we have a pretty interesting show lined up today, huh, Una and Marvita?
Yes, we do. We're going to meet our hosts a little bit as we go through several programs to finish off a new year here on the Every Woman program and go into what is hopefully an exciting but not too exciting 2019. There's that old proverb that they say from ancient China that may you live in interesting times, but maybe not too interesting sometimes.
I agree.
I feel, boom, that is the word for my 2019, and that can't be nothing but good.
All right. And I'm actually still in 2018, I have to admit. I haven't even thought about 2019. Mm-hmm. I'm like trying to figure out each day as it comes. But, hey, I'm glad to be in good company. Like you said, I think Every Woman is a really great show, as far as I'm always encouraged by the people that we talk to about the show, and they're like, oh, that sounds really interesting. You know, so the more that we're able to bring interesting stories to you guys out there, the more we look forward to having other shows like that to make this just the place for you to come to find out what's going on with the world as far as women in Kansas City, the interesting things they're doing, the challenges that we have to face, and just feminism and how different people respond to it.
Yes, and we are reaching out and speaking about women of all different backgrounds and races and economical status, social status, however you want to look at it. We reach out and we try to give information to every woman.
Every woman.
Hence the name of the show.
That's right.
So, Marvita, you bring a lot of guests on the show, and you have a lot of interesting topics to inform us in the studio and the listeners. And I just have to give a shout out to Una and Fiona for being, they're so encouraging to, they have been with me, and I know they absolutely have been with you as well, and to allow you to bring on the guests that you bring on. So just a shout out to Una and Fiona.
Definitely.
For being great producers.
Big hand clap. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Fiona.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
thank you.
And I think one of the things that for me is, because I have kind of varied interests, and a lot of times most of the people I bring to the table are people that I've been networking with. And it's so, for me, it's so comforting to know that I can find out a little bit more about those people that I met, where otherwise I would have just, you know, had that one meeting. But when I'm able to bring those guests on to Every Woman, then I'm able to sit down find out a little bit more about them. And then we can strike up a conversation even after the show sometimes that allows us to get to know a little bit more about each other. But as you were talking earlier, we've had people from cryptocurrency to people from the mayor's office of Kansas City, Kansas, people in real estate, people who are doing have different businesses in Kansas City. So for me, it's just really a comforting thing because these are the types of things that I'm interested in, and it helps me to just continue following my interests.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. I think, have we spoken, had the Black Kansas City Chamber of Commerce on here yet? Has that happened?
I don't think we have this year. Okay. It's possible in prior years.
Okay.
We had the woman who was the Kansas City, Kansas president of the Black Chamber of Commerce.
That's what I mean.
But
yes.
Not Missouri.
Okay, yeah. That's what I meant. And just, you just bring on a lot of different guests with a lot of different organizations. So just hats off to you on that, Marvita, for being that vast, you know, and bringing that to the table and for our listeners.
Well, honestly, it started as a way for me to get around and figure out what was going on in Kansas City. When I first came here, I started networking because I had found living in another city how that works and how it helps you to get to know the city and then get to know the people in the city and the businesses in the city. And it just kind of provides you a shortcut for making friends, I guess. But for me, that was really the only way that I knew that I would be able to find out quickly what was happening in Kansas City, because there had been some similarities between Kansas City and where I lived previously that always kind of tickled me, because they'd always show up on the same city list. Mm-hmm. You know, and so when I finally got here, I said, well, if they're on the same list, let me just treat it the same way. Mm-hmm. And just go about finding out about Kansas City, even though I had gone to school in Johnson County. Mm-hmm. I really didn't know Kansas City. It was it was a mystery, and it was a place I was afraid to go by myself.
Well, and we're actually going to touch on, you know, how you got to know Kansas City, how you ended up coming to Kansas City. But I just do want to bring up that it was very smart how you wanted to know about the city that you were living in, because I think a lot of times when people move to different states or cities, they don't look up anything. They just go there and they live. You know, mm-hmm. they go to work, you know, do what they have to do, and then they live. So I think that's very smart of you to dig a little deeper and delve into the city that, you know, you were going to be living in. So,
well, it was the only thing I knew at the time. Thank you.
And that was one of the things that Fiona and I wanted to do when we took over production of Every Woman in 2018, is that we wanted to bring the show's focus more towards Kansas City and the people and the issues and the community right here in this area, while at the same time being cognizant and being aware of national and regional events, but mm-hmm. really to focus more on the local voices, especially to expand representation of minority and underrepresented communities within Kansas City on the radio.
Yes.
And I was really glad that that was the strategy going forward, because there's so much going on in Kansas City, and I always say that, and someday there's going to be a song besides Everything's Up to Date in Kansas City. There's so much going on in Kansas City. I mean, from the streetcar to the, you have the startup community that raked and is ranked with other startup communities in the country, as well as major companies, corporate headquarters have located here, and just the return of education as far as Kansas City being a place where people are being able to find a place to have a good place to send their children to school. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a lot of concerns, but I think a lot of attention has been put into the community, And I think that we just got to make sure that these things keep happening.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I remember at one point, my son is 18 now, but when he was a little younger growing up, I'm like, oh, man, we're going to have to move out of here. These schools, I tell you. But we made it.
Yeah.
So, but enough about all of that. We want to get to know more about our co-host here on Every Woman, Marvita. Yes. So, Marvita, we know that you're not from here. Can you tell us, where did you come from?
My family is from Macon, Georgia, home birthplace of James Brown, Little Richard, Otis Redding, for people who are of that generation. And we lived there till I was in fourth grade, and then we came up here because my father had an opportunity. He took advantage of his the Army grant, I forget what they call it, but he took advantage of that and was able to get a restaurant franchise that was popular at the time, and he started his own business here in Overland Park.
Okay. And so when you moved out to Overland Park, how was that for you?
It was very, honestly, we were so excited. I mean, because when I went to school in Georgia, we were in a Catholic school. And so we went to school with nuns and everything, but one of my teachers said, and Marvita's going to be moving here, you know, and she showed it on the map, and I was like, oh my goodness, it was so far away, you know, but then when we finally made it out here I was in third grade, I think, at the time, and so we traveled out here. I winded up in where before my two brothers and I were in the same school. Then when we got to Kansas, I was going to an elementary school where I was the only black person in the school. That was a shock. And my brothers went to an undergraduate school, and they were like maybe two of five or six, I'm not exactly sure, maybe 10 black students. And so that was our culture shock, you know, being the only white people in the apartment building, black people in the apartment building, the only black students in the school, that type of thing. So it was a very different situation, but it wasn't completely overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. And you and I had talked a little bit about that, about going to schools that were predominantly of the white race, mm-hmm. and how it was sometimes hard to accept, or maybe not that it was even realized, that we were black.
Yeah.
And when did you realize that you were black?
So it went through a couple of different stages. So when I first came when I first started going to school to Valley View Elementary School on 95th Street in Overland Park, mm-hmm. I had to deal with people not being able to say my name. I was just amazed that these teachers could not say my name, you know, and it was like so frustrating that after a while I asked my parents, because I was just tired of having everybody's attention come towards me when the lady messed up my name. And so I asked my parents if I could go by my middle name, which was Karen. So that was my first step. Mm-hmm. When I didn't accept or decide to defend or stand or deal with the confusion around people not being able to say my name. I was just tired of having that kind of attention. And I didn't think about it at the time, but that was my first step towards what I would say would be a assimilation.
Mm-hmm. Now, so going onward with that, I just wanted to talk about the different things that you went through from, you know, coming from Macon, Georgia, and then moving to Overland Park. Were there any instances that, you know, there were racial slurs or anything like that happened to you?
Well, honestly, I'll have to say when we first came here, I really thought everybody was nice, and it was just kind of, I don't know, it was kind of, I just felt everybody was nice, and people would say they were nice. Mm-hmm. People would tell me how nice they were, you know, so I agreed that everybody was nice. And then one day I was walking home from school, and a bus drove by, and a young white boy leaned out the window, and he called me a name. And the name stung like a bee sting. I was like, what in the world? Because coming from Macon, Georgia, and my father was surprised to hear this, but coming from Macon, Georgia, I had never heard anybody call me that name before. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh my God, did anybody hear him say that? You know, and I was really hurt and embarrassed and just like, what? It just kind of like opened up a wound or something. I don't know how to describe it, but it was like reality sank in to a certain extent. And some other things happened afterwards that helped me to kind of understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. But that was really the first time I had heard it. And I was like, I thought this stuff happened in the South. I didn't know it happened out here. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought this was different. So my naivete was getting a few lessons at that point.
Mm-hmm. So after being broken into the reality of the world has how I'll refer to that. Mm-hmm. So onward to high school. I know you had mentioned that you ran track. And when right. you told me that, I was like, wow, Marvita ran track too. So tell me about your experience as running track in junior high and high school.
Well, like you, I appreciate where you come from when you say you're shy. Although I know we have our Sasha Fierce, you know what I'm saying, that we put on. But I definitely, oh my goodness, I was so shy in high school especially, because that was a whole different ball game. I mean, you're dealing with, oh my goodness, hormones and body consciousness and all of that. And so finally, I think freshman year I was scared to death. Sophomore year I finally found something to fit into, mm-hmm. and that was running track. And so I started running track, and that was where my friends were. And then as the years progressed, you know, because at first we only ran against other Shawnee Mission high school classes. Mm-hmm. But after a while, then we started running against Kansas City schools, especially my senior year. And yeah. when we started running against Kansas City schools, that's when I started seeing other black students my age. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time, actually. And I was like, oh, my goodness, you know, because it was just different. Mm-hmm. It was different. And it gave me something to look forward to as far as the track meets were concerned. And it also just kind of, I don't know, it was just exciting. It was just something different from, and seeing somebody like myself, mm-hmm. you know, because then I even started having black friends, you know, mm-hmm. at other schools. So it was really kind of a welcome change, because my brothers always had black friends, mm-hmm. but I didn't, because I didn't get they were older and they could get around more, right. but I didn't. So for me, that was a welcome experience.
I think we always try in environments, we try to find people who have something in common with us. Yeah. Doesn't always have to go to the race or the skin color, but I think we most feel comfortable in environments where we have something in common with people.
Yeah, it just gives you something to talk about. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that it has to always be like that and you can't go out and meet different people.
Right.
But I would have to say that by that time, I was really assimilated, and I can give you some examples. I don't know how to say it. Okay, so stuff that I would do, I would pull in my lips so that nobody thought my lips were big, mm-hmm. you know, or I would talk, you know, like the people around me, mm-hmm. and I would try my hardest to squeeze my butt in, because I didn't want anybody telling me I had a big butt. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be like everybody else.
Right.
You know?
And we, you know, this is the moment of truth. Marvita and I had actually had a little bit of conversation about this prior to the show. Mm-hmm. And I also had shared with her, I went to a school that was predominantly white as well. And this goes for any race in any environment where you can be a minority. And as a child growing up, it's hard to stay firm with who you are. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's important for any person of any race to not want to be anything other than what you are, because I used to want a nose job. I felt my nose was too big. So it's just important to, in any environment you are in, whether you're the minority or the only one, mm-hmm. accept and love yourself exactly the way you are. And it's a process sometimes mm-hmm. to get to that, but we reached it. So I just want other people to reach it sooner.
Yeah. And I think
I could cut in a little bit there, because a lot of people, when they learn I've been over here for 16 years, are very surprised I still have my accent. And part of that's because I came here as an adult, so I was more fully formed and maybe more set in my ways. Mm-hmm. But also, a lot of it is when I meet people and they talk to me about my accent, they all tend to say, oh, I love your accent. I think the English accent is sexy, or you sound so intelligent or something. Mm-hmm. If I had an accent that people in America tended to look down on and discriminate against that might hinder me in getting jobs or something, I'm fairly sure I would have tried my hardest to lose it.
That's mm-hmm. true. That's true. Because, you know, I think these days more so, where in when I was coming up as a young girl, coping skills and self or self-awareness or mindfulness weren't things that were taught so much or things that were looked at and encouraged. But I think these days, more and more so, from the youngest to the oldest, you know, more people are thinking about what it is that makes them that special and unique person that they are, mm-hmm. and not feeling like I have to fit into a mold and be like everybody else, because we all are unique, and it's good to be able to see, express our differences and feel comfortable about it.
Mm-hmm. It's a process, but it's one that definitely must be done.
Yes.
And so you didn't let any of those things, you know, tear you down or derail you from having a great future. So after high school, tell us, what did you do next?
Well, I had been really close to my grandfather. I was a grandfather's girl, if that's a thing. And he was a teacher in the South. He was a professor at Alcorn State University, and he's a pastor. So he knew about a school, a historically black college called Tougaloo College. I had never heard of Tougaloo College. The only history I got in high school was that there were slaves, and when that was a very painful time to be in a class when you're talking about slavery,
right,
amongst a bunch of white people. But he hooked me up. He was like, yeah, check it out. They have a summer program. They have a pre-engineering, a pre-science, a pre-med program. And just check it out. It's a six-week program, and you can, you know, see what you're interested in. He knew how shy I was. By that time, I knew I didn't want to go to KU. KU, to me, nothing against the school, but at the time, it was just an extension of the Shawnee Mission mentality, and I wasn't really trying to follow up on that. I was trying to find out a little bit more about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took him up on it. I was scared. I mean, I was scared because we used to vacation with them in Mississippi, but going to school there by myself, that was a whole different story.
So was it the fact that your brothers weren't with you then?
Oh, that was so great.
Oh, so you loved that.
Oh, I did not want to go to school with my brothers. I tell you, because oh my goodness, we just fought all the time. So, well, not all the time, but we were those brothers and sisters that mm-hmm. fought a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so happy to be able to go to a school by myself and be my own person and find out about things by myself. Mm-hmm. The school, my graduating class from Shawnee Mission South was over 700 people. When I got to Tougaloo College, the entire student body was 650 or something like that. And so that was complete culture shock. So I went from a totally white environment to a totally black, and not only black, but Southern environment. And so just a whole different pace, a whole different form of expectations. But Tougaloo College was a hub amongst the historically black colleges. That's where a lot of the famous speakers would come and have meetings and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Stokely Carmichael would meet there often during that period when he was around. And then a lot of political activity would go on there. And so I didn't know all that until I got there. But once I got there, I started seeing what a rich history it had, and how fortunate I was to be there.
Tougaloo University, yes, Tougaloo College. That was the first time I heard of it, and when talking to you and to find out about that, that's totally impressive. And mm-hmm. like you said, the rich history with the civil rights going on at that time, they would gather there to have their meetings. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, because Jackson, Mississippi, you mm-hmm. in the heart of the South. You're not in Alabama, but still, you're in Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of stuff was still going on. I remember one time when I was a freshman, they got us to go to a government meeting. It was like a city council meeting or something like that, where they were going to vote on something. I don't remember what the vote was, but this image was very clear in my head. It was sort of like meeting in a church, you know, you have the left side of the church and the right side of the church as far as the pews. Okay, so we got in late. The right side of the church were the black people. The left side of the church were the white people. The only thing is, because we got in late, I had to sit on the left side with the white people at the very front. And we were voting. And it was, you know, it was that kind of vote where when you said yes, the black people said yes, everybody raised their hands. And then when you said no, the white people said no. So it was a, I guess, so I'll say, they asked, which do you vote? Yes or no, and they'll say they counted the no's. Who says no? So all the white people raise their hand. I turn around. I'm the only person on that side. I turn around and look at all these white men raising their hands and looking at me like, you know.
You can put your hand up?
Yeah.
You're on this side.
And then when they said, and who says yes, and everybody on that side raised their hand, and I raised my hand and turned around. And, you know, it was like, it was an empowering feeling to be in a community and to, you know, to have, to feel like I belong somewhere. And honestly, I just didn't get that growing up in Kansas City like that. I loved my friends. I had some really close friends. We ran track together. But as far as having that identity of being a black person in America, that really came for me when I went to Tougaloo College in Mississippi.
And I think that's great. It doesn't matter if you receive that or if it happens at your hometown, as long as you get it. Once you know where you come from, it's unstoppable, you know, where you'll be going. Once you know, it's vital to know who you are. Once you know who you are unstoppable. And I've had that experience. And there's more for me to know about my history, you know, black history. There's so much more for me to know. And not just with black history, my own personal family history. You know, once I get all of that, you know, just blowing through the roofs.
It changes your whole outlook.
It does. And so you're at Tougaloo University. What are you studying?
Oh, okay.
What have you decided? Tougaloo College. Tougaloo, what have you decided to study at
maybe
Tougaloo
maybe it'll become
College.
A university after this interview. But yeah, Tougaloo. So I tested out in the math subjects, you know, and so because of that, they put me in physics. And I'm saying that just how it happened. It wasn't like I chose physics. I didn't know anything about physics. So they put me in the physics class. They put the other people, they tested into the pre-med class. So I was in pre-physics, pre-engineering, and they were in pre-med. The pre-physics group was like 10 people. The pre-med group was more like 40 people. So we were kind of like the special group because we were so small. But what it did was there was like a six-week program. We learned some things, did a lot of, you know, physics and math, learned what to expect when we got into school, and I think it was one of the most helpful things I could have done. I was so grateful to my grandfather. He really did get me. He understood what I needed. And, you know, and I guess I just have to say for those young people who are not sure about what to do, sometimes your family members can point you in the right direction. You know, be open to that, because I'm not sure what would have happened if I hadn't been open to that.
That is awesome. And so you're there, and you know, you're in that special group, and you're studying at Tougaloo College. So what happens while you're at Tougaloo College? Are you working any part-time jobs? Do you
At Tougaloo, what I was working was learning about things like being a black revolutionary, and you know what I'm saying? You know how when you go to school and you meet people and you learn about what's going on at school. So that was one of the things I got to meet and see that type of mentality, you know, or learning about sororities and fraternities, learning about the basketball girls, learning about the gospel girls who only wore dresses, you know, just seeing all the different cultures that were around me. That was really, especially my freshman year, that was me just kind of, you know, checking out what was going on. By my sophomore year, I got a little bit more involved. And then we had a lot of different, you know, physics classes. By then, I was really realizing that I was not that physics person, but my grades were good enough, so I just stayed in it. And then at the end of my sophomore year was when I got my first job, and it was like a job at Corning Glassworks. And so to be at Corning Glassworks, I mean, my goodness, when I checked with my friends, my white friends in Kansas, they were going back home to work in the grocery store or, you know, in the retail store or something like that. So every summer I had a serious job, whereas I know I was working at Corning Glassworks for a couple summers, and then I worked at a place called Fermi National Laboratory, which is like CERN Laboratory in France. Before CERN, it was Fermi and Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, where they would, you know, collide particles together to figure out bosons and leptons and neutrinos and all of that. You know, a whole different conversation.
Yeah, that's a really impressive resume right there. And your career's barely even started at
that point.
I'm
telling you. It's true, you know. And so, but all along the way, I realized I felt like a foreigner. I'm in this physics. I'm getting through. I'm going through the process. But for me, it wasn't. When I saw students who thrived at it and who did well, and I saw myself, I just knew it just wasn't what I wanted to do. But meanwhile, it would give me a good job. And I didn't know what else to do. So I was just going to keep moving forward in it.
That's great. So how did you get affiliated with those positions that you had? Like you said, some of your acquaintances or students that you went to school with were working in the grocery store, but yet you had a little bit, you know, how you were breaking some groundbreaking positions.
Yeah, well.
How did you get into those positions?
That was the thing about Tougaloo, and that was like the secret sauce about Tougaloo. They knew how to make relationships that were critical to their students. And so whether it was relationships with Fortune 500 companies so that they could go there and work during the summer, or relationships with other universities so that they could be exchange students, or, you know, they could start at Tougaloo and finish, you know, as in engineering, or finish in medicine at another well-known institution. Those were the types of relationships that they forged, and they were strong relationships that continue to this day.
See, that's great. And I wanted you to share that with everybody so they can hear how, and everyone does not have to go to college, whatever your path and personal choice is for your life, so
that's
be
true.
It. And I just wanted to stress how that Tougaloo College had those connections where you were able to have those work experiences prior to you even graduating.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just part of our expectations. After you realize what was up, you know, then everybody was kind of in on it as far as all the students. These are the things they look for. And, I mean, for example, I also was in the Brown Exchange Program with Tougaloo, and that was my sophomore year. And so what that meant was I spent a semester at Brown, and I think it was two of us went to Brown, and then two of their students came to Tougaloo. So two white students went to Tougaloo, and two of us went up to Brown. And that was culture shock as far as being amongst, you know, an Ivy League institution and seeing how they do school, you know, and what happens there as far as like the frat boys and, you know, just things like the large classes. My engineering, my material science class was like 300 people, you know, and I found some friends eventually, but I didn't know the system, and there's a system to it, and if you don't get into that, you know, it doesn't support you, you know, and so in anything, I guess, you just got to learn the system and do what you need to do to thrive and survive. I enjoyed it because I really did like living in Providence, Rhode Island. It's a beautiful city. So much was going on. You got to see a whole different culture. Like down the street from us was the Rhode Island, I don't know if it was a school of design, but there was also the Rhode Island Food Institute. I don't know what you call it. But, I mean, you know, you're seeing these people with these white hats on and, you know, going in and cooking and stuff. I learned at that point, I know one of my first projects was in solar energy. And what I learned there at that time has helped me to understand the feasibility of solar energy anywhere, because Providence, Rhode Island is a state that doesn't get a lot of sunlight. And we were able to show efficiencies based on Providence, Rhode Island that showed that solar energy was something that could be utilized and would be worth your, you know, an economic benefit to you. So I said, if you can do it in Providence, you can do it anywhere. And so someplace like Kansas, where we get a lot of sunshine, I'm all for solar. And that's just because of the experience that I had at Brown University.
That is awesome. So I want to talk about one of your, I'll say, your favorite classes that you told me you had. One of your favorite ones. Electricity and magnetism, taught by, and I'll let you have the honors on that.
Delbert Friesen.
Professor Delbert Friesen. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So I used to, I don't know how many of y'all used to read the comics when you were growing up, but, you know, there's, if you there, if you can picture a caricature of a person, of a man teaching physics, Delbert Friesen was that man. He was a tall, skinny guy. He had that high-low part on the side where it's high on the top and low. Okay, and then, so he'd be talking to us, you know, about his favorite topic, electricity and magnetism. And once he got into the swing of it, that skinny man, he would stand up, and then he'd put his foot up on the lab bench, and he'd be standing like, you know, it'd be higher than what I can do. It'd be higher than what I can do right now. But he put his foot up, and he'd just be standing like that, like that's natural.
And I said, was he a cowboy? I mean, why did he have his foot up there like that?
I don't know how that ever started, but he was so tall, he was the only person who could do that. You know, everybody else, the lab bench came just to their stomach or something. So he was tall enough so that he could, he just, you know, like flexible, like a rubber band type of thing. But he loved, you could tell, you know, to him it was second nature. And we had four people in the class. One guy totally got it. Another female, she got it. And then there was a third female. She was above me, and I was like, "What in the world is going on?" It just didn't make sense to me. I'm more of a visual person, and it just made no sense to me. And it wasn't until I got into grad school that it finally made sense to me what we were measuring, because we were measuring stuff like energy fields and flux and stuff like that. Didn't make no sense to me. But one day in grad school, I was walking by a huge power supply. And when I walked by it, I could feel the energy go past my body. And I was like, that's what they were talking about. Why didn't they just say so? But, you know, it really, sometimes you need those examples to help you to relate to the things that you're being taught when they're so abstract as something like physics. But for me, that was definitely something I need. The other guys, they got along all right, but for me, it was always a challenge.
You know, I just want to take this opportunity for Una and Fiona. I mean, Marvita is just coming with all this knowledge and experience. Did you all know all of this about her?
I knew a little because we talked before about what her life had been like when she first became a host on the show again after a long gap. I asked her if I'd know a little bit more about her, and she said that she'd been in electrical engineering, and then she'd moved to Africa, which we haven't even touched on yet. And, I mean, that's a huge upturn of your life. I mean, I moved from England to America, and so many things are different here, but so many things are the same. For me, it was the same language, apart from converting a few words like elevator and lift and things like that. Moving to Ghana, it's just such a huge change, and I'm looking forward to us talking more about that.
Yes, I knew a bit about Marvita. I had asked a few people at the station about her. They had very high things to say about her and her experience, and I had found some things online, because anytime we want to, you know, consider a host here on Every Woman, we want to see if they are a really rich and interesting person in their life experience, and that definitely describes Marvita. So we were very pleased when she came back and joined us and was able to give us the benefit of her experience and her life wisdom and put that into her interviews that she does here on the radio. So thank you, Marvita.
Okay, so thank you. all right, but meanwhile, I've interviewed Una and Fiona. And, you know, honestly, there's just a lot going on. And I appreciate having the opportunity to talk about myself because, quite frankly, maybe a year ago, I probably wouldn't have been able to do it. So for me, this is kind of like therapy to be able to sit here and talk about myself comfortably, mm-hmm. you know. But I'm surrounded by people that do know a little bit more about me, and then I know about them too. So, I mean, Una, please, you know, she's received awards next to world leaders. You know, Fiona has traveled from here from the UK to here, and whenever we're doing an interview, she always has some type of insight to add to it. And you, who told me you were shy, I'm just trying to figure out, you know. Okay, Sasha. But anyway, I'm just glad that we're surrounded by such capable and curious women, because I think that's really what it comes down to, curiosity mm-hmm. about and respect for other people.
Mm-hmm. That's what makes the world go round. Now, we got to dig a little bit deeper because we haven't touched a lot of history and current of your life. So you graduate from Tougaloo College. What do you graduate with from there?
So a BS in physics. Then I went to Howard University to get a master's in solid state electrical engineering. You know, the things that your phone, the devices that make up your phone are the types of things that we were studying about. I used to work with lasers and things like that. It was a lot of fun. It made engineering more fun for me. Mm-hmm. It was a little dangerous sometimes. I could burn holes in sweaters and things like that.
That sounds fun.
and it could be expensive if you broke a laser, which happened one time. Mysteriously, somebody broke a laser. But overall, I still realize this. I really appreciate this opportunity, you know, but this isn't exactly, you know. And I remember one time one of my advisors, I guess, at work was saying, well, what is it you would like to do? And I said, well, if I could, I would like to be a liaison to this technology, about this technology to Africa. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like way before anything about Africa was happening for me, you know. But it just so happened that I eventually did get to go to Africa because of a group I was involved with. They were missionaries. We went to Africa, and from there I got a lot of life experiences that had nothing to do a lot less to do with engineering and how I'd been trained as far as a student.
How long was your stay in Africa?
So after working as an engineer for 10 years, I stayed in Africa for 11 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was really very rewarding. Some very memorable experiences. And some very challenging experiences too, but for the most part, I'm just very happy that I had a chance to go, mainly because what I noticed about a lot of people in this area of the country don't go anywhere else, mm-hmm. you know, and they don't see what other people live like. And to me, I was just so glad that I remember the first time I stepped off the plane and I saw other people that looked like me. And the way I mean that is I saw people that looked like me. I saw people that looked like people who lived down the street from me. I saw what a tribe was. And for the mm-hmm. first time, I understood what a tribe was as far as that family context mm-hmm. of, you know, black people and maybe why they look like they look. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, that's where they came from. Oh, that's their family. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like that. And that really just struck me, and it just made me feel very much at home.
So that is amazing how being like the only black girl in your school, how you end up going and living in Africa, the motherland, for 11 years, you know, while you have your degree. I just think that's an amazing journey that you were on.
And it was a little different. It wasn't exactly planned, and that's a whole nother story. I won't get too much into that story as far as the first part of it, but the last 2 years while I was there, I was on my own more so, and what I did was that's when I learned to survey the city and find out about what was going on there, because when I was in Ghana, West Africa, what I found was that every time Kansas City would show up on a list about Kansas City, whether it was a good place to visit or whether it was one of the top cities for startups, startup communities, Ghana would show up on the same list.
Wow.
And I was like, what a coincidence. I know both of those places. You know, they wouldn't be top of the list, but they'd be in the same top 10. And I was like, check that out. And so at the time, I was going around Ghana meeting CEOs, meeting community leaders, going out to the villages, going to the World Bank, World Health Organization. So just really being involved in the community and the types of things that were going on there, and being able to travel a lot. I got invited to visit a refugee camp, and that invitation became a whole nother thing. I mean, I just started visiting there. I adopted the soccer team adopted me, and I adopted the soccer team, you know, so that it was something that was just really profound. I learned a lot about what it takes to help people and the mentality that you have to have. And I think that was really the best thing that I learned when I was in Ghana.
What would you say that mentality is?
Well, okay, so it started out for me. I was visiting home at the time. I had my family had wanted me to come home, and so I came home for a while. And when I was home, I was watching TV, and there was a news conference coming out of Washington, and it was the president of Liberia saying, making a request to their engineers, come back to Liberia, because Liberia had gone through a lot of wars and things like that. And so they were like, come back, all you people who are engineers and blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, I'm an engineer, you know?
Yes, you are.
I said, I could go to Liberia. I hadn't been to Liberia before, and I didn't know how I would get there. But when I knew I was going back to Ghana. And so when I got back to Ghana, and I started connecting with people from the embassy, and I finally actually went to Liberia. And what I learned is that Americans, at that time anyway, I don't know if it's still the same, but at that time, Americans had this kind of mentality of, I will go and help these people. You know, I will go and help them.
Yes, yes. Did everybody catch that?
Yes.
Everybody catch that?
I will be the help to that situation. And, you know, for a while, you know, I really kind of bought into that. I didn't realize how much I did until I saw other people from the States come over and how, you know, that was the mentality. But what happened was, after a while, I realized they got a lot of the answers. And in fact, they helped me. There were times when I was staying in Ghana, I had no place. Because I had a crazy landlady, I had no place to stay. She tried to plant marijuana in my house. And if you get caught with marijuana in Africa, that's like being caught with cocaine here.
Wow.
It's a bigger penalty. And so, you know, I had to deal with my neighbors, letting them know what kind of person that person was, and I had to deal with the law and just let everybody know this is going on over here, you know. But the other thing was, I had to realize the people have their own solutions for their own problems. meanwhile, there's so much going over in America, you could probably be doing a whole bunch more in your own country than you are here, where the cultures are different and they're not always accepting you because you're from another place.
Right. So what after Africa? Because we know you stayed there for X amount of time, 11 years, you say?
Mm-hmm.
So what'd you do after Africa? What was next?
Okay, so after 11 years, my son and I, we made our way back over to the States. And when we came back here, it was a cold December. I had my summer dresses from Ghana. I remember getting off that plane, and like it was like the cold kind of took all my memory of my 11 years in Ghana. And so, plus we lost our luggage, so we had to I had to work on my luggage, getting that all back. But what I decided when I got here was, okay, this is how I learned Ghana. This is how I got around. I came to know what was going on there. I said, let me just try to apply the same process surveying the city to find out what's going on in Kansas City. And that's what I started doing. I started surveying the different organizations, the women's organizations that were here. I found out about Coder Dojo. I found about Kansas City Women Technology, KKFI. I went to school at Johnson County Community College, became a radio station manager there. So just step by step, I started becoming involved in and more engaged in the community. And it just, lately it's starting to make sense, because I was kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
But now it's beginning to make sense.
And that's great. I think it's fair to say there's clearly, we cannot discuss Marvita and her life in just 1 hour, because we're approaching time.
And we are.
Yeah. So I just want to say, let everybody know what you currently do now, where you're at.
Well, right now I've taken those skills that I learned in Ghana as far as like community engagement. And now I work with Habitat for Humanity, which is a really great model for rebuilding our communities from the ground up and through the neighborhoods as well. And that mission that Habitat has is a mission that so many companies are involved with already, and that most of the people I know, they love it. And that's something that I'm really happy doing right now.
And we thank you for that. And she's also the co-host here on Every Woman.
And I'm the co-host here on Every Woman. And I've actually been invited to co-host another show on Thursdays, depending on some political things that are happening. But
which show is that?
That's the Cowtown show. And so I'm waiting to hear how that's going to go. But it just depends on if somebody gets elected or not.
See, she's unstoppable, folks.
Oh, wow. This has been a really great show talking to you, Marvita. And thank you very much for leading us through this conversation with Marvita, Angela.
It's, oh, absolutely. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity.
It's been great having you here.
Yeah, Angela, you did really great. I really am, you know, thank you so much for, you know, just your, the way you did it. I really appreciate it. Una and Fiona, thank you guys so much. You guys, they do so much behind the scenes. People don't even know it. But without them, it couldn't be done. It's really a very combined effort. Anthony, shout out to you, too.
Anthony.
Yeah, Anthony's at the hospital getting his ankle looked at right now, but it's okay, and he's doing fine.
Good.
All right.
We want to thank you all for joining us for Every Woman this week. Tune in next week when our guest is going to be Paku Her, who is the lead organizer and trainer at Sheng Development Group, who is going to talk about intersectional feminism and racial equality. Mm-hmm. And thank you very much out there. You have been listening to Every Woman on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio
Station.